from the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Patty Farmer returns to the show this week. She is the author of The Persian Room Presents, an oral history of the classic nightclub, and we had a great time talking about that book a few years ago. And now she's written a new book all about another famous night spot, the Playboy Club. In fact, all the Playboy clubs, and the Playboy Jazz Festivals, and the Playboy Magazine, and the whole Playboy scene. The book is called Playboy Swings, How Hugh Hefner and Playboy Changed the Face of Music. Patty Farmer, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thanks, Gary. Thank you for having me, and I can't believe it's been 3 years since we chatted before.
Crazy.
Or the last time.
Time flies. Oh,
like that.
Yeah. The subtitle of your book, the Playboy, How Hugh Hefner and Playboy Changed the Face of Music, that's kind of a broad claim. Playboy was an influential publication, and believe me, during the swinging 60s, I made quite a study of the magazine. But how did the Playboy scene change the face of music?
And again, this is one of the reasons I loved writing this book and doing the research on it. Many, many people, number one, don't realize how influential and necessary Playboy was to the country for entertainment. For almost 20 years, they were the largest employer of entertainment in the country. Between the Playboy clubs and the jazz festivals, they hired more comedians, singers, and musicians than any other company. So that was number one. But also, Hefner's own personal beliefs were for civil rights. And when he opened the first Playboy Club in 1960, segregation was firmly in place in the USA. So he's been credited by many people. Dick Gregory, number one, I don't know if you're familiar with that story, but credited with breaking down the color barrier on stage. He really didn't care that segregation was the law, and Dick Gregory was the first black comic to perform in front of a totally white audience, and it was shocking. It was very shocking, and that was only one example. Hefner kept doing that. He did it with his TV show, Playboy Penthouse. He had Nat King Cole come on the show, and Nat did not sing. He just came on to chat, and he sat down on the couch with Rona Jaffe, who had her own book out at that time, and they talked about literature. And Gary, today, no one...
Right, that wouldn't raise any eyebrows, but then that was quite a thing.
That was shocking. Mm-hmm. Was shocking. And Hefner suffered. I mean, he lost sponsors, and he lost networks. But that really did not deter him at all. Also, when he opened Playboy in Miami and New Orleans, those two were franchise clubs. And the Playboy partners that had the franchise ran it according to what was going on in the South, and they restricted the black members from entering the club or black performers from performing in front of white audiences. And Hefner just could not abide by that, and he quickly bought back those clubs. Within, one was 6 months and one was 9 months, and it was at a huge financial profit to the franchisees, but also, it was a huge drain on Playboy to buy them back. The folks that had it made like 300% on the deal. But Hefner didn't care. He didn't want to negotiate and didn't want to let it go a day longer than he had to, because that wasn't what he believed in.
Well, it's interesting, because I don't think people who haven't read your book know these things about Hugh Hefner. I think they know that he likes to wear pajamas and smoke a pipe and have a lot of young girls around.
Right, exactly. he's kind of a comical figure to a lot of people, but I'm not saying all that isn't true.
Yes.
But he's a certified genius. Some of the business practices he had were, groundbreaking. They were never done before. First of all, franchising had just been tested out by one of the hamburger franchises. They were starting that in the 50s when Hefner did that with the Playboy clubs. That was, you know, business-wise, you know, groundbreaking. And when the network told him he could have a variety show, they pictured it like Johnny Carson, you know, sitting behind a desk and having great talent come out. And Hefner pictured it like sitting in a living room and having, you know, great friends over, and, you know, one might be Cy Coleman, you know, tootling around on the piano, or, you know, Tony Bennett dropping in and being persuaded to sing a song. So he did a lot of groundbreaking things.
I think I was a little too young to remember Playboy Penthouse, but I remember Playboy After Dark quite well.
Right, right. And, you know, he just pushed his own agenda, and really there were a lot of ramifications for his actions, and he was actually an activist. He, a lot of times, quietly saw injustices being done, whether it was in the gay community or the black community, and he would send Playboy attorneys to help out very quietly. You know, he never did it with the thought of, boy, this is going to be great publicity for Playboy. You know, people, really, a lot of people won't find these things out until they read the book. You know, Playboy Swings tells a lot of stories that people aren't aware of. It tells a lot of funny, crazy stories, but a lot of really important stories.
Yes, and now I know that you, I really enjoyed your book about the Persian Room, and I know that you're a historian of American entertainment. And was it the nightclub aspect that led you to decide to write about Playboy?
Yes, that was the linchpin, if you will. Like I said previously, it was what opened my eyes to what an important part they played in the entertainment industry. You know, they had 40 clubs at one time, and each club had 4 showrooms at any one time going on. So that's a lot of, like I said, comics and singers and musicians and trios, and a lot of people. It gave them the opportunity to get their footing and start their careers. A lot of people were discovered. You know, I sat down and talked to Al Jarreau when Al was not Al Jarreau. He was still Al and Julio. They had a little duo going on, Julio Martinez and Al Jarreau, and Al was discovered and put on Johnny Carson and, you know, became Al Jarreau. But
he got his break at the Playboy Club.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wild. Well, you know, Playboy magazine had pictures of girls. And I don't know if you're familiar with that. No, you probably know that. As a matter of fact, now I wanted to ask you, Patty Farmer, because you were a model.
Oh, my goodness.
Did you ever pose for Playboy, Patty?
No, I didn't.
Did they ever ask you what happened?
No.
Now, you say that. Yeah, you wouldn't have considered that kind of modeling?
You know, I was never faced with it, so I never have to be able to tell you how I would have answered. I don't know. I don't think any of us really know what we would do.
Well,
they surely have beautiful ladies in those magazines. And again, Hefner's genius kind of shows through with the magazine, because up until 1953, when he had the first one, there were, you know, women's magazines or gentlemen's magazines.
Oh, yes.
But they were a little bit more hardcore with, you know, blank backgrounds or shot outdoors. And Hefner made it The Girl Next Door and beautiful settings. You know, the girl might be sitting at her vanity table, not wearing anything, but these beautiful ladies, and I think it made you guys really feel like, gosh, you know, maybe I have a chance. You know, these are, you know, this looks like the girl I go to school with, or the girl next door.
Well, as a woman and a model, how did you feel before you started investigating and writing about Playboy? You know, how did you feel about Playboy? How did you feel about Playboy bunnies and playmates?
Yeah, You know what? I thought they were cool. I thought they were, you know, I thought the outfits were very interesting and iconic. And I think, you know, you hear so much about, you know, how it was so chauvinistic and this and that. But the people I talked to were more like me. You know, Joan Rivers or even Lily Tomlin. You know, I spoke to Lily Tomlin, and she is a well-known feminist. And she said when she was booked to play at the Playboy Club, she played as part of a troupe or a review, and she really did not want to do it because of her perception of the bunnies and how they objectified women, etc. And she said after she did it and after she was there, the bunnies were her best friends, and she really liked that atmosphere. She would take her meals in the kitchen with the bunnies. So I think people just, you know, maybe make judgments on things they're not familiar with. But I haven't run into too many people that have said anything bad about it. And I've spoken to a lot of the bunnies who, they were just, some were wives and mothers with young children, some were college girls, and everybody was thankful for those jobs. I mean, nobody twisted their arms. They had, every time they opened in a new city, they literally had hundreds of girls for blocks standing in line for those jobs because they paid well and they were fun and they were very protected. Nobody was allowed to make comments or, you know, pull their tails or any kind of unpleasantness. And a lot of the girls, Gary, you'd be surprised to hear, told me they actually went through college on the Playboy Tuition Assistance Program.
Hmm.
Who knew that?
Yeah, I'm shocked.
Yeah.
We're talking with Patty Farmer, and her new book is called Playboy Swings, How Hugh Hefner and Playboy Changed the Face of Music. I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf. The problem with Playboy magazine is that it had those lovely pictures, but there was just so many words, just tons of those articles. Well, how boring those... No, but of course I jest. Everybody always used to say, oh, I only read it for the articles. But Playboy magazine had some really, really great writers.
They had amazing writers, Gary. I bet your listeners don't know, or maybe some know, but not everyone, that Ian Fleming, you know, the great James Bond creator, wrote short stories for Playboy before they were shown on the big screen. You know, On Her Majesty's Secret Service was a short story in Playboy before it was picked up for a movie. And there were, I think it was 7 short stories that were later made into the iconic Bond movies. So between that and just name an author, and they were there.
Yes, I'm aware of that. I never read any of those articles, but I know they were there. But so now, how did the Playboy Club... Now, I saw the television series. There was a brief television series. They only ran for 3 episodes. But I thought it was going to turn out to be something interesting, but they didn't give it much of a chance. But how did the Playboy Clubs come into being?
Well, it was... the magazine was started in 1953. And they had run an article about another nightclub that they thought was cool, and it was Hugh Hefner and Victor Lowndes. Victor was like second banana, or first banana to Hefner being the major domo. And after the article ran, and this is back before you shot off an email, Victor went to Hef and said, look, Hef, you know, I have 1,000 letters that men wrote asking about these nightclubs. You know, how do you think I should handle it? Should I have the secretaries answer everyone, or, you know, what should we do? And they were just kicking back. This was after work. And Victor said, you know, why are we giving this other club all this attention? You know what? We should open our own club. You know, that's what we like to do. This was in Chicago, and after work they like to go to local little jazz clubs and unwind and maybe play a game of cards and listen to great music. And so Victor said, you know, we should open our own club. And they kind of looked at each other. And Hef said, yeah, that's a great idea, you know. And then they laughed and they said, yeah, the only thing is we don't know bubkis about running a nightclub. And Victor says, you know what, I have a buddy of mine down the street who knows how to run a nightclub. And that was Arnie Morton from later on the famous steakhouse Morton's. So they packed up that night and they walked down and told Arnie their idea. And Arnie says, that's a great idea. And they all three of them, threw in $10,000 and they opened that first Chicago nightclub.
And then they were subsequently opened other clubs around the country. Now, you mentioned that some were franchised, but did Hef open other clubs?
Yes, yes. And actually, the second one was Miami and then New Orleans. And those two were franchised, but like I earlier mentioned, they were quickly bought back and they were owned and operated by Playboy. And the majority of them were run by Playboy. And even the franchise clubs had very strict oversight.
Well, your book has some great stories in it, and there was somebody who turned up in the book, and I was so surprised that they were there, and that was Bob Dylan.
Oh.
How is it that Bob Dylan hung out at the Playboy Club? I was shocked.
I think he was in love, and the great Lainey Kazan ended up running two of the rooms. She started in Los Angeles, and Hef actually gave her the opportunity to run Lainey's room within the Playboy Club. And she made it, you know, what the other rooms were, but she totally ran it and booked who she wanted. From what I understand, it was just an amazing little club, and then she did so well they opened it in New York. But Bob Dylan was kind of taken with Lainey, and he would come and hang out at the Playboy Club.
They don't seem like each other's type somehow.
You know what? Who could not be Lainey Kazan's type, though? I mean, she was gorgeous. I think everyone was in love with her, from Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin to, you know, Trini Lopez and Bob Dylan.
And me. I remember I had a picture of her up on my wall. She was wearing this, like a man's work shirt, but it was just one button. Woo!
I know, yeah. She was, you know, and I'm a woman,
yes.
And she was, you know,
I knew that, by the way.
But she kind of reminds me even of a little bit sexier Raquel Welch, you know, kind of that robust or Rubenesque figure. And
she was the Jewish Raquel Welch.
There you go. She just left men in her wake. That was it. And Lainey is still out there, still singing her heart out and acting.
Yeah, fine actress.
What I understand, we were talking not too long ago, she just finished My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2, which comes out next year.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she was so great in My Favorite Year, one of my favorite movies.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Talk a little bit about some of the other people you spoke to. I know you talked to a lot of comedians.
Talked to a few comedians. The book's primarily about jazz and the great jazz artists and singers. But, you know, it was the era of great comedians. So, you know, you couldn't leave them out. Plus, they told the best stories. You know, they were just, I think almost all the comedians I know are overgrown frat boys. You know, they're just overgrown frat boys getting into trouble and mischief and doing pranks and getting around there. But I've talked to many of the greats, from Joan Rivers, Lily Tomlin, Shecky Green, David Brenner, Rich Little. They all had great stories about the Playboy Club.
And some of those people no longer with us. How long have you been working on this book?
It's been about 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it goes back, and I was very blessed to have had the opportunity to talk to some of the people before we lost them.
Yeah.
Miss Rivers, you know, top of the list.
Yeah, yeah.
A shame.
Well, it's tragic, of course. We're talking with Patty Farmer, and her new book is called Playboy Swings. how Hugh Hefner and Playboy changed the face of music. And of course, a lot of that has to do with the jazz polls and the jazz festivals. Talk about that a little.
Oh, the jazz festivals. You know, that first festival, I don't know if you know how that came to be, but it was 1959, and the magazine had been in print for 5 years, and Hess was looking for a idea for a party. He wanted a big party to commemorate the occasion, and he decided to throw a big jazz party, a jazz festival. And that was the first Playboy Jazz Festival. It was in Chicago, and everybody came. I mean, Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong and Sonny Rollins, just everybody, all the greats. The only one on his wish list that couldn't show up, I believe he was doing a movie, was Frank Sinatra. But everybody, it was an amazing couple days in the history of jazz, and it made a lot of history through the years in talking to Sonny Rollins, you know, probably one of the greatest living jazz icons we have nowadays. He talks in the book about forming a very important partnership with Bob Cranshaw at the Playboy Jazz Festival, and they're still partners to this day. They play together. So there's a lot going on it. And the festival goes on every summer to this day.
And the jazz polls in the magazine played an important part.
Right. You know, half love jazz. You know, in that first magazine in 1953, with Marilyn Monroe on the cover, Hess could have written about anybody, you know, in his editorials. He could have written about Marilyn. He could have written about any movie star, any politician, any sports figure. And yet the first editorial was about the Dorsey brothers. You know, he loved jazz. And the famous Playboy interview, when that started in 1962, again, you know, any movie star would have sat down and talked to him. That was the height of Playboy cool. You know, it was cool and sophisticated. He could have gotten anyone to sit down with him, and he asked Miles Davis. So Miles Davis was the first Playboy interview.
Really?
And on and on. He liked jazz. He had the Playboy jazz polls, where he asked people who read the magazine to write in and if they were putting a dream team or a dream band, if you would, together, who would they pick? Who's their favorite trombonist or vocalist, or, you know, on and on like that. So the subscribers wrote in, and they put this jazz poll together, which was pretty amazing. And that went on for many, many years.
Now, the clubs are gone now.
Well, they are starting to pop their heads up again. We have one very viable club in London, and I've been there. It's beautiful. Has the bunnies.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. And I addressed that in Playboy Swings. So they are starting up again.
So do you think they'll be in Chicago and Los Angeles and New Orleans?
No, I would love to see it. Many of the performers I talk to would love to see it. I spoke to Lorna Lust, and she said, oh my gosh, you know, if they open up, you know, I'm there. I want to work at the clubs. You know, which is something, you know, nowadays to say, yes, I want to work at a Playboy club.
Yeah. Well, you know, in Manhattan there are still, you know, supper clubs, the Carlisle and so forth. But, you know, around the country, those venues have just died away. I guess television killed them, as you addressed in your Persian Room book. But do you think that nightclubs in general could come back?
I don't think so. You know, I think it's the times. You know, where in the Persian Room or the Playboy Club, you could get someone like Diane Carroll to come and sing, you know, 8 shows a week in front of, you know, a crowd that was eating supper. They opened up Madison Square Garden, and they can go and do one big show and make, you know, a lot more money I just don't really see them coming back, unfortunately. And it costs so much. You know, back in the day, even the Persian Room, you know, $10 cover charge. The Playboy Club was membership. You know, anybody with $25 had a membership key. So it was doable. It was very reasonable. Nowadays, you mentioned the Carlisle. I love the Carlisle, but you can drop $300 a night, you know, for one show.
Sure,
It's expensive.
Or a concert at Madison Square Garden, for that matter.
Right.
Well, of course, the clubs live on in the works of my guest, Patty Farmer. Her new book is Playboy Swings, How Hugh Hefner and Playboy Changed the Face of Music. Patty Farmer, thanks so much for stopping by and talking about your new book on From the Bookshelf.
Oh, you know I'm a fan, Gary. Thank you so much for having me. It's always such a pleasure to kick back and just talk music and entertainment with you.
That's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time and will come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, and you can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Patty Farmer. Her new book is called Playboy Swings, How Hugh Hefner and Playboy Changed the Face of Music. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.